If you've just tuned in, my name's Steve Austin, and this is 612 ABC Brisbane, Coast FM, the World Wide Web, and more. Well, my guest up close and personal tonight is someone who holds the honour of setting up the first online newspaper in Australia. So significant was its arrival that the National Library in Canberra now holds archives of the newspaper in the Canberra archives. The company started by Scott Balson. Scott Balson became the webmaster for the One Nation political party back in the 1990s, when Pauline Hanson first appeared in the Ipswich City Council and then later on won a seat in federal parliament. Scott Balson also set up and ran Global InfoLink, which was a web-based company in Ipswich. But as you'll hear tonight, Scott Balson suffered what would best be called prejudicial bullying by News Limited newspapers, owned by the global media mogul Rupert Murdoch, through his organs, the Brisbane Courier Mail and the Australian newspaper. Against the background of the United Kingdom inquiry into Mr. Murdoch's UK papers, Scott Balson argues that Mr. Murdoch's Australian media empire needs to be broken up into small parts, and his story is a reason why that's so. He won his complaints about the News Limited papers with the Australian Press Council, but the whole experience left him with strong views about Australia's media companies. I asked him, first of all, how he came to set up Australia's first online newspaper right here in Queensland.
Yes, that actually happened by accident.
Tell the story.
Well, I love research, and what I used to do every day, ironically, is I used to take the headlines of the Courier Mail and do a little chapter and put that onto a page and then post it up on the web.
Like a summary of the local news.
Okay. Yeah. And what actually happened, this is long before News Limited or anyone else had done this, and what happened was I suddenly started getting emails from expat Aussies all over the world who said, look, keep it up because we're keeping in touch with what's going on in Brisbane. And then I started getting emails from people who said, hey, there's a whole lot of news you're missing. And that's where I started learning about globalization, which wasn't talked about at that time, and some of the international treaties that were really not good for Australian people, but very good for Wall Street.
All right. Now, you, I think the data or the web pages of the first online newspaper in Australia are now actually archived with the National Library of Australia. In other words, the National Library sees this as an important archive of the history of the media in Australia.
They do. It's actually a historical document. There are about 5,000 web pages in that archive.
All right. And this is not a bad effort for a place like Ipswich, you know, for one bloke and an immigrant based in Ipswich. Sets up the first web-based publishing company in Queensland, first online newspaper in Australia.
Mm, got me into a lot of trouble there.
Got you into a lot of trouble. We'll come to that trouble in just a moment.
Yeah.
At some point in your time in Ipswich, you met an insignificant Ipswich City Councillor, and her name was Pauline. Tell me how you came to know her.
Well, Pauline Hanson was a councillor at the Ipswich City Council, and that's why I first had contact with her through my work. What happened after that was, because I lived in Ipswich, I used to get the Queensland Times, which had all the local politics going on, and from there I started learning about Hanson and her famous letter that got the Courier Mail's steam up and got it disendorsed by the Liberal Party and so on.
After she made her speech in Parliament?
Oh no, this is long before she even got into federal politics.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. After she wrote that letter, which actually talked about how wasteful ATSIC was, she basically was called a racist by the Courier Mail, and John Howard disendorsed her for that seat, and then she stood as an independent and won because so many people supported what she said.
Yes, I remember the time. I think it was with ABC TV 7:30 report at the time.
Could well have been.
And her speech was the story of the moment. The House of Representatives had never seen anything like it, nor heard anything like it for some, I think since the days of the White Australia policy was the analogies that were drawn at that time.
Hmm.
So you knew her and you'd followed her political career from the start.
Yeah.
What led you to become politically or in a business sense associated with her?
Well, there was a very disturbing international treaty going on at the time, and it was called the Multilateral Agreement on Investment, or MAI. And I learnt about this through my contacts with people overseas through my online newspaper. And it very quickly became clear that this paper was anything but democratic. It was all about big business stealing everything from small business. And I drew this to the attention of the Liberal Party and also to the Labour Party, and all the politicians there said, oh no, it's good for Australia, and I knew it wasn't. And so what
happened? This is the well-known rising tide of globalisation.
Good
around the world.
Yeah. So what I did was I contacted Pauline Hanson's office, and they immediately jumped on it and said it's something that they would look into. And after that, I then threw my support behind her.
Okay. Now, it turns out that your support would become pivotal to the One Nation political party and Pauline Hanson. You were a man who understood the internet in its early years. You understood its message delivery capability and its ability to aggregate and collect information. And you were on the cutting edge of this. And as a result, it made you quite effective and a target.
Yeah.
You were targeted personally and professionally by whom?
In short, the Courier Mail.
This is 612 ABC Brisbane, ABC Local Radio Queensland, Coast FM on the Gold and Sunshine Coast, ABC Digital, the web and more. My name's Steve Austin. I'm up close and personal with Scott Balson. You may know Scott Balson's name. He has been pilloried in the media for many, many years. As you'll hear a little bit later on, his name in some quarters became synonymous with racist. And I'll ask Scott about that in just a moment. So you struck up an alliance and started working with the One Nation political party in its very early years, probably at its most controversial with Pauline Hanson. And what was your role?
Initially, what I did was I covered some of the launch events, like the launch of the party I was at, and I took a lot of photos. And that was quite an extraordinary experience, because I was there, I saw how Pauline Hanson had come through all the protesters, how they spat at her, and it was just extraordinary. And when she came in, she delivered what was, quite frankly, a great speech. And all the media were there, including the Courier Mail. And the next morning, the Courier Mail had a tiny little statement in which they referred to the book, The Truth, and commented that it was racist because it talked about cannibalism with the Aboriginal.
Sorry, just forgive me, you're getting ahead of me. So what's the book, The Truth?
Oh, it's a book that was subscribed or ascribed to Pauline Hanson, her as the author.
So Pauline Hanson published a book that was called The Truth, or purported to be published by her.
Yeah, but it wasn't actually written by her.
Okay.
She hadn't even read it. Basically, someone else did, but they put her name on it. But instead of
covering... Did she know that?
Oh, of course she did.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
She was a bit silly then, wasn't she?
Very silly. But the point is that instead of covering the launch of a major political party or political force, nothing was mentioned about what had happened. The whole story in the Courier Mail was about the book.
So this is the reason partly why we're speaking today, is that after hearing the evidence of Rupert Murdoch in the UK and the calls for an inquiry into the media here in Australia, you want to tell elements of your personal story and how you feel you were mistreated, in particular by newspapers owned by Rupert Murdoch here in Australia.
Yeah, exactly. But it also goes further than that. It actually looks at the crossover between politics and the media.
So where media, in particular newspapers, seem to have the same interests as political figures, in this case here in Queensland.
Yeah. Well, when you think of the separation of powers, that's the separation of powers between the judicial system and the political system. There is no separation of powers between the media and the political system. What's happened now is they're one and the same. And, of course, you've got the same publisher, Murdoch, controlling his empire, and you've got different politicians coming in all the time. So guess who's top dog?
Yes, there's been hundreds of books written about the relationship between journalists and political interests. Did you have any reaction or thoughts when Lindsay Tanner produced his book most recently complaining about media coverage of politics in Australia today? You must have felt some sort of level of sympathy for Mr. Tanner.
I haven't actually read the book.
Any response?
Oh, well, basically, anyone who states that the politicians are compromised by the publishers is totally correct.
In 1998, you became One Nation's webmaster, as it's termed. You clearly know the online game, and you played a pretty pivotal role in getting One Nation's message out, in particular online. Now, this was quite a new world even then, but you were able to spread the political message of One Nation, bypassing traditional or legacy media, as we call it these days. And that must have been, A, exhilarating, but B, threatening to corporate media interests in the state.
Yes, it was. I had a mailing list of about 10,000 people all over Australia. And it was quite extraordinary, the interest in the articles that I wrote on my online newspaper. When I set up the One Nation webpage, I used to have links to those articles because I had lots of photos, and they gave a totally different perspective to what the media gave.
And very soon after, probably the biggest political tidal wave since the shutting down of the upper house, the Legislative Council in Queensland, occurred in the state, and that was 11 parliamentary seats were won at a state election by the One Nation political party. What year was that again?
That was 1998.
11 seats were won by One Nation in this state.
Yeah.
And boy, did that focus the mind of political players and newspaper editors right around the world.
It did.
To describe that time to me, how do you regard that time, you personally, Scott Balson?
Well, to me it was quite an exhilarating time because I had played quite a key role in gathering the support of people who really didn't understand what the party was about. I remember the night of the election, because I was invited into the big room where all the results are posted, and Pauline Hanson actually went online, and this is the first, I think, we actually had her on a chat room in the One Nation booth for about 20 minutes interacting with people on the night of the Queensland election. And it was a fabulous night. I mean, it was just extraordinary because we knew that the people in Queensland, 24% of people, 24% of Queenslanders voted for One Nation.
You actually didn't really get the seats that the vote actually recognised, did it?
No,
that's the quirks of the electoral system.
Well, both major parties had put us last.
All right, so this happens, and it really becomes a very tumultuous time in politics. Hmm. I think it's fair to say it's quite clear that Ms. Hanson was politically way out of her depth.
Absolutely.
And she was surrounded by some advisers who, some of their motives you would reasonably question.
Absolutely.
What was your motive?
Being involved in the party?
Yes.
I guess my initial motive was I was concerned about all these international treaties which were happening, and they're happening in secret. We weren't involved in them, and they had a major impact on, you know, the average man in the street. And One Nation was the only party that would even look at them. And in fact, Pauline Hanson gave a speech about the MAI back in 1999. And as a result of that speech, there was a joint parliamentary inquiry into these treaties, and they threw out the MAI. So I feel I played quite a major role in that.
One Nation could legitimately say that it achieved something quite significant in Australian political history in a number of areas.
Absolutely. Mm. You know, the funny thing is that Hanson was slated as racist for wanting to abolish ATSIC, and for wanting to tighten down on immigration. And the media went after his racist party for doing that. Now look what the coalition did. They did exactly the same.
And they have suffered taunts from...
But not the mainstream media.
Not the mainstream media, but they did from their political opponents that they were mimicking your party, One Nation, mimicking racist tendencies of One Nation, things like that.
But the mainstream media took a totally different view from what they presented One Nation.
So something had changed, at least in the mind of the media.
Yeah, the politics and obviously the contact they have with the media.
If you've just tuned in, my guest is Scott Balson. You would probably know him as a man who was described as the webmaster for the One Nation political party. This is 612 ABC Brisbane. Not long after that time, in fact 1999, you published a book, a self-published book called Murder by Media. And it was an argument. You presented an amateur writer's thesis, as it were. Explain what you argued, if you can, in a couple of sentences for me, Scott.
Sure. Murder by Media was basically an expose on how compromised the political system was in Australia because of the power of the media barons.
And give some more detail to that. What examples did you use to substantiate your belief or your argument?
Well, I basically used the online newspaper as part of the book, where I gave extracts of my coverage of One Nation events and what had happened. And then alongside that, gave the reporting by the mainstream media like the Courier Mail The Australian and other papers, and the chasm between the two was just enormous.
So you accused traditional newspapers in Australia of being too close to their sources, too close to politicians.
Yes, and basically the key here is that the politicians have been given the agenda by Rupert Murdoch. So all they're doing is they are pushing his agenda, and as long as they do that, they get favourable coverage. But if someone, the man in the street, wants to push another agenda that Murdoch doesn't want, they get absolutely hammered.
Now, what do you mean by that? I by nature, disbelieve conspiracy theories. I hear an awful lot of conspiracy theories in my job, and most of them turn out to be powerful interests looking after their corporate, bottom line, or people having similar views on things and forgetting about the normal filters of impartiality or reasonableness. In other words, what often looks like a conspiracy is actually just the flaws in human nature, quite human fundamental failings. What exactly do you mean when you say you felt at the time that the media was taking its orders from Kerry Packer? That gives very big alarm bells to me.
Well, more so Rupert Murdoch. I'll give you two examples. One out of my book, which is a very short statement or comment.
This is the book Murder by Media.
Murder by Media. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the other comment I'd make is that when Kevin Rudd became the opposition leader, the first thing he did, if you might recall, was flew to America and had a meeting with Rupert Murdoch. That's the first thing he did as opposition leader.
I think it was one of the first. Yeah.
Well, it was very close to after becoming opposition leader.
Yes.
And the other crucial aspect or crucial point here with regards to Kevin Rudd is that he is a godfather to Chris Mitchell's youngest son. And Chris Mitchell is the editor of the Australian newspaper, which is run by Rupert Murdoch.
Previously, he's been the editor of the Courier Mail newspaper in Queensland.
Exactly. And the timing of that is interesting. Now, the comment out of Murder by Media, which I'll read to you, that night on the ABC 7:30 report, Fairfax journalist Peter Bowers said, "I think the last thing that made it too hard that Mr. Howard realized he couldn't give the Fairfax papers to Mr. Packer without incurring the extreme displeasure of Mr. Murdoch. And when Mr. Murdoch gets angry with governments, he turns his editors loose on the government. And I think that was the last thing Mr. Howard wanted in the run-up to the next federal election."
So you're reporting another journalist there?
Exactly.
Okay. All right. And what's the significance of that, Scott Balson?
Well, the significance is that the politicians bow down to Mr. Murdoch. They don't listen to what the people want. They just listen to what the publisher wants.
Wouldn't it be fairer to say they face a range of external pressures? I mean, they face, pressures from within their political party. They face pressures from media magnates who want to look after their corporate interests and their worldview. They face pressures from the electorate. They face pressures from electoral funding. They face pressures, influences from a variety of sources.
But the one pressure they shouldn't face is publishers determining which way they should go. That's why there should be a separation of powers between politics and the media. No one in the media should be allowed to be involved in any way with politics and vice versa, because that is one of the great compromises we have in this country.
My guest is Scott Balson. All right, this self-published book was released in 1999, Murder by Media. It essentially becomes a bestseller. There's a very high demand for this book at the time. And 2 weeks after it's launched, you get threatened with legal action by one of those major media players.
Well, I didn't directly, but my major distributor did.
Tell the story.
Well, what happened was before I actually published the book, I'd organised with Dimmicks to be our main distributor of the book, Murder by Media. Now, of course, to them was just a title and they were happy to do it. I got coverage on Howard Sattler's show in Perth.
Perth radio station?
Perth radio station, and also...
Mr. Sattler's not known for his moderate and balanced remarks, I don't think.
Well, he gave me an R, and our sales in Perth were astronomical,
right?
Mainly through the Dimmick stores. And also I had one with Sydney when I launched the book at Dimmick's in their main store.
Okay.
And then what happened was sales were going incredibly well, and I got a phone call from a One Nation supporter on the Gold Coast who had actually gone into one of the Dimmick stores on the Gold Coast to buy the book, and he'd been informed that the book had been pulled from the shelves. So I immediately contacted the distribution manager in Sydney to find out what was going on.
Of Dimmicks?
Of Dimmicks. Mm-hmm. And she told me that she had had a direct phone call from the CEO of Dimmicks, who told her that Kerry Packer had heard about the book and was threatening to sue Dimmicks.
So you're getting this second hand.
Yeah.
But Dimmicks certainly pulled the book.
Yeah.
And you were told that the chief executive of Dimmicks Bookstores in Australia had received a phone call from Kerry Packer or his lawyers saying, get that book off the shelves or I'll sue.
And in the letter that you've got a copy of, you'll see that on page 2 they refer to the gambling man and the amount of legal costs that anyone involved in that book went through. And that again was all about Kerry Packer's father. And that's how books that upset the main publishers are silenced and shut up.
Now, you eventually received some formal legal letters, I think, didn't you?
No, I never did. Not in relation to murder by media.
Okay. Did Dimmicks?
I don't think so. It probably wasn't even a threat, but it was probably Mr. Packer Sr. phoning up the CEO of Dimmicks, and I believe they were quite good friends, and just saying to him, hey mate, this book is not all that good, can you just pull it from the shelves? And that was done.
You would regard that as censorship in anyone's language,
absolutely.
Okay, so the book's still a bestseller, but it's pulled from the shelves. What happens then to sales of the book?
Well, I posted Dimmicks' letter on my Australian News of the Day newspaper, online newspaper, scanned the letter and put it up, and it became an overnight bestseller. All over the world, people wanted the book that Packer had demanded be banned, and it sold out very quickly, with sales, international sales, going exceptionally well. And at the same time, ironically, I was getting boxes of books back from Dimmicks, which have been taken off their shelves here in Australia.
So did you sell them all?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, all of this, I mean, people have been around for a while would remember the sort of the heightened intensity and focus on One Nation at that time. Mm-hmm. But it was at this point when your name started to seep into the media, the traditional, the legacy media, more and more. I believe that at some time that year, you did get a reporter with the Courier Mail who warned you that the paper, in an editorial sense, was out to get you. I want to be very careful. We don't name anyone here, but is that correct?
That is correct.
So you were warned by a journalist at the Courier Mail that the paper had decided that they were going to go you. For what reason?
Well, I should tell you how I knew the reporter first, and I'm not going to say who it is, but he and I were in quite close contact because of my involvement at the One Nation. He would phone me up from time to time and ask me things, and I would
try to get stories.
Up. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So that's how I knew the guy. Mm-hmm. But basically, he phoned me up one day and said that the book Murder by Media had really upset certain people within the Murdoch organisation, and they were looking for any which way they could to go after me.
So he's implying that their threatened corporately, or that they felt a personal defamatory slight, or what was it? Were you given an indication?
I think it was more the outrage that some little fella who had this stupid little online newspaper would challenge them in this way. You know, they weren't used to that happening.
So in terms of a media sense, you weren't any sort of commercial or economic threat, but you were clearly getting traction, as it were, in an agenda-setting way.
Yeah, exactly.
If you've just tuned in, my guest is Scott Balsam, former webmaster for the One Nation political party. What resulted?
Well, nothing happened for several weeks, but at that time, the papers were starting to cover with some sense of outrage that there was a senior Labour MP who was being investigated for paedophilia, sitting in a very prominent position in the Parliament, in the Queensland Parliament, that is. And back in October 1998, the Courier Mail had published an article in which they named this person and wrote a story about what he was alleged to have done. Mm-hmm. So what I did was, in July 1999, I basically transcribed their story and actually gave the quote as to where I'd got the story from.
So you did a cut and paste, as they call it?
Cut and paste, okay. Into my online newspaper.
Okay.
And within hours of that going online, a reporter from the Courier Mail a female reporter from the Courier Mail, lodged a complaint with the DPP.
The Director of Public Prosecutions?
Yep, against me. Mm-hmm. And I got a copy
on what basis? That you had plagiarised or breached copyright by cutting and pasting their text?
Nope. Under the Sexual Offences Act of 1978 in Queensland, that I had named someone who was facing an investigation on acts of paedophilia.
Even though you'd taken the quote from the Courier Mail newspaper, which had named the person?
Exactly.
And what was the response by the Director of Public Prosecutions? Do you know?
Well, within hours of the complaint being lodged, my name was being bandied around on the radio as someone who had broken the law. And within 2 days, the Attorney General had ordered that I be arrested on a summary charge being like a speeding fine. On the Friday, on the day that a reporter at the Courier Mail wrote an article, an opinion piece, explaining why it was justifiable to arrest me, on that day I was phoned and told to go to the Watch House in Brisbane. I spent some time with the senior detective who was investigating the offence, and was then taken to the Watch House, where I was thrown in prison. I was put behind bars. I was fingerprinted. I was photographed. I spent about 3 hours behind bars at the Watch House. And from there, they took out a search warrant. They came to my house, and they searched. They spent a whole afternoon, three policemen, searching my house. And they're probably looking for
something. What were they looking for?
I don't know. Maybe something they could actually hang on me.
What was the search warrant? What did the search warrant detail?
It just said they could search my house.
So they had a broad-ranging search warrant in which three police officers searched your house
yep.
all day.
All afternoon.
Because you had been charged by the attorney, or under the, by the behest of the Attorney General in Queensland at the time, for cutting and pasting something that had been published by the Courier Mail.
Exactly. And the charge was basically that I had named Bill Darcy before I should have.
Right, a man who was subsequently found guilty of,
yeah.
Of charges.
Yeah.
But you cut and paste what the Courier Mail had already published.
Yes.
What action was taken against the Courier Mail for breaching the same piece of legislation?
Well, the argument the Courier Mail had was that this was before he was actually charged. So what they were saying, in fact, it's in Solomon's article, that although they had named him, the only legal ramification was that Darcy could have actually sued them for defamation. And what their argument was that even though they published it pre my article, it was okay to do so at that time. But I should just add at this point that in the same week that I was arrested, the Courier Mail broke that law three times, because the law clearly states that you're not allowed to mention the place of employment of someone who's facing the charges, and saying a senior politician gives a place of employment.
So what resulted?
Nothing. And several other people broke the same law, but no charges were ever brought.
So you were the only person ever charged by reprinting what the Courier Mail had already published?
Exactly. And not only that, but I'm still the only person to have been charged under that law.
So what happened? You faced a magistrate or a judge?
I faced a magistrate. I went through three trials. The first two were adjourned because the first one, the police didn't have their evidence together, even though it had taken them 3 days to have me arrested. The second one was basically adjourned because I had it in the wrong jurisdiction. I was being heard in Brisbane when it should have been Ipswich. And, of course, the third one happened in January. Well, basically, the pre-trial happened in January 2000 at Ipswich.
And what resulted?
Well, when I pleaded not guilty, they then called a date for me to be heard, and I spent a whole day in court. And a week later, went before the magistrate again and was found not guilty.
So you were completely exonerated? You were found not
totally
guilty.
Exonerated, and I represented myself in court.
All right. Now, the trials, the three bizarre trials that you faced, were they covered by any newspaper or media organisation? Did we here at the ABC cover them? Did anyone else cover them?
The first two trials were extensively covered in the evening news by the Courier Mail, and during that time the Courier Mail ran a series of articles claiming that I was a racist and I was anti-Semitic and all sorts of other things. And you know, the overlap between my trial and the articles they were writing was not coincidental.
Well, let me ask you some questions. You were born in East Africa. You were educated in South Africa under the apartheid system. do you hold views that regards one particular race or colour of people as being somehow inferior to any other race?
Definitely not.
Have you been a member of any political party that has had any political platform that suggests a particular race should not have the same rights as another race?
No.
Then how did they stick? Because that was certainly my impression of this person, Scott Balson. This is the first time I've met you, I think, certainly face-to-face.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And in my mind, if you were to conjure up your name, I would have said, oh, yeah, that's that bloke that helped out One Nation, the racist guy. Mm. How did this racist tag come to be placed upon you? What relevance did it have?
Well, you know, when you're being targeted like that at a personal level, it gives you a tremendous feeling of total an inability to respond, because the media, because of the way they operate, will never give your side of the story. All the articles that were written were basically one-sided and obviously totally wrong.
So you didn't feel you were given a chance of fair reply. You've been through three trials. All of those trials have been reported. You were found not guilty. Yeah. Were you given a chance, or was there any sort of balancing article to say, well, actually, this chap's not guilty of what he was charged with?
Well, the Courier Mail ran a little column article, probably about 3 centimetres long, just saying that, for the record, you know, this guy was found not guilty, and it was like on page 15, after they'd been running front-page articles about me.
So they published it, but you felt it was sort of buried.
It was buried.
There was no sort of balance or reasonableness about it. Did you ask for a chance to respond formally?
Yes.
And what did... So you said went to the paper or the editor and said, look, I want a chance to respond to these things you're saying about me. And what was said?
Well, they just refused to. And not only that, but with the articles that they wrote, I took them to the Australian Press Council back in 1999-2000.
So this is the sort of the... They have a non-binding but adjudicating position over print media in Australia.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what did the Australian Press Council find?
Well, they threw out all my claims at that time.
Okay. On what grounds?
Well, basically, I guess because I was involved with the One Nation Party, which, was being widely reported as being racist. And I should mention at this time that there were a lot of Aboriginal members of the One Nation Party. There were a lot of Asians who were members of the One Nation Party. It was a totally colourblind party that was concerned about globalisation and some of these big issues.
So One Nation was a multicultural political force.
Absolutely. We actually had in 1998, I think we had an Aboriginal standing for one of our seats.
Okay. This is 612 ABC Brisbane, ABC Local Radio Queensland, Coast FM on the Gold and Sunshine Coast, ABC Digital and more. My name's Steve Austin. My guest is Scott Balson, the former webmaster for the One Nation Political Party. Speaking to him at this time because I don't think his story's ever really been fully put on the record, but also because of the appearance of Rupert Murdoch before a British parliamentary committee, talking about media ethics, competition in the media, links between political figures and journalists and more. Mr. Balson approached the ABC for a chance to tell his view on the issue. All right, you go through all this. I think the Bulletin magazine, which was owned by Kerry Packer at that time, also named Bill Darcy in certain circumstances. I forget what they were now. But when this took place, you said, okay, look, I'll fight back here, and you made a complaint to the then Criminal Justice Commission in Queensland. What happened?
Well, actually what happened was after the Bulletin magazine wrote the article where they named Darcy, before they should have, I lodged a complaint to the DPP. And 3 weeks after my complaint, despite phoning them up every second day and saying, hey, what are you doing about it? Remembering I'd been arrested after 3 days, they would just come back and say, well, you know, we're still looking into it. And after a month, I then lodged a complaint with the CJC saying that there are double standards here, because I was arrested in this short period of time, and clearly the Bulletin magazine, there's a copy of it, they've broken the law, and the police are refusing to act on this. And the CJC sat on this, despite me writing countless letters, for over a year. And eventually, the Commissioner of Police, Bob Atkinson, wrote back and said, oh, it would have cost too much to take the Bulletin on. And not only that, but the statute of limitations has now expired, so we can't pursue this case.
Bob Atkinson wrote you back?
Well, he wrote to the CJC. I got a copy of his letter.
So you've got a copy of that letter?
Yeah.
So he said it would cost too much to pursue the Bulletin?
Yep.
And anyhow, it's taken so much time that the statute of limitations has passed?
Yeah. And I would also mention that, with tongue-in-cheek, I wrote a press release to the Courier-Mail with a copy of the article that was in the bulletin at that time saying, here's a story for you. And, of course, it was never touched.
You then decided, I think, to take legal action. What happened? Who are we going to take legal action against?
Well, once I was found not guilty, I had grounds for a malicious prosecution. So what I did was I then went... I did this all myself because I couldn't afford to take on a QC and a lawyer. I went to the Supreme Court, got the documents, and I did involve Tony Morris QC and got a 79-point statement of claim put together, which clearly demonstrated that my trial was, or my arrest was politically motivated, and also that the Courier-Mail were involved in it. After I presented that 79-point statement of claim, about 3 or 4 weeks later, I got a book full of technical inquiries back. Took them to Tony Morris, and he said, look, mate, have you got $1 million? And I said, no. He said, you're wasting your time, because you won't even get to court.
Now, why do you say that the Courier-Mail were involved in this? I mean, the Courier-Mail are a media organisation. This is a big story. One Nation Political Party was a big issue at the time, and you were clearly a person of interest. They're just reporting the facts. They're reporting the story. As any, I mean, if I was in their position, I'd report the story as well. It's absolutely fascinating, compelling story.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think they're involved and not just reporting on it?
Well, if you're breaking the law yourself, why point the bone at someone else? And clearly they were. And not only that, if you take the case of the Bulletin magazine, why didn't they take interest in a far bigger organisation that was breaking the law that... They suddenly had no interest in.
So you remain the only person in Queensland to be arrested under the 1978 Act.
Basically, the Act says you won't disclose the identity or details related to a person who has been investigated for acts of pedophilia.
All right, so the three organisations that did it was Scott Bailson, webmaster for One Nation,
mm-hmm.
The Courier-Mail newspaper,
yeah.
and the Bulletin magazine,
yeah.
and only Scott Bailson... was ever charged and found not guilty.
Exactly.
The guys that did the original publishing, no action was taken against them.
No.
This is 612 ABC Brisbane, ABC Local Radio Queensland, Coast FM on the Golden Sunshine Coast and more. I'm up close and personal with Scott Bailson, former webmaster from One Nation Political Party. What do you take away from all this then, Scott Bailson? What does this say to you as a citizen of Australia?
Well, I'm very sad because... we don't have a democracy. The only person with a
power... Well, we do, Scott. I can vote, I can go and write to the paper, I can talk to my local federal or state MP, I can talk to Scott Bailson and no one stops me. I can broadcast the interview and no one stops me. And as long as I'm not doing slander or libel or defamation, I can get it out there and we can tell the story. That's democratic.
But the problem is that it's compromised before it gets there. The problem is that the reporting... on someone can either make them or break them. And if you know what goes on behind the scenes at the highest levels between publishers and politicians, that's where the balance or otherwise comes in.
Which is what we're seeing in the United Kingdom with News International and the British establishment.
Well,
not the British establishment, but police and politicians.
Yeah, but it's even worse in Australia.
Tell me why.
Well, because Murdoch basically runs the whole mainstream media in Australia.
What, because of his ownership of different media outlets?
Here? Absolutely.
Okay.
He has total control.
All right, what would you like to see happen? At this time, somewhat politically, opportunistically, the Greens and the federal government have said, yeah, look, we might look at a media inquiry. But there's no evidence of illegality or phone tapping or phone hacking by any news limited organisation here that I'm aware of, and I've certainly heard no evidence, and John Hartigan has been fairly strong, so there's no evidence. What political leaders are complaining about here in Australia is editorial positions or editorial content. What's your position?
Well, I think the whole system is incestuous. I think the real issue here, and it's far worse than phone hacking, is that if you look at the people behind these politicians, more likely than not, and I'm talking about the advisors, the media advisors, more likely than not, they are directly from Murdoch's press. And they, when they lose their jobs, they go back to Murdoch's Press. So there's a direct contact between...
And the ABC, though, Scott Balls. I mean, there's a lot of journalists from the ABC who go work for one side of politics.
Sure. But that is where there should be a separation of powers. Because what you've got is that link directly to the politician from the publisher.
And what is the effect of that? In my mind, that might create a mindset or a groupthink, but that'd hardly be unique.
Well, I think it would create independence, because at the moment there is clearly an issue related to two things. One is as I mentioned, the overlap of media advisors who are actually reporters, and the second thing is the actual control that Murdoch has over what we hear in this country. Now, he made a very interesting comment at the inquiry in London the other night or the other day. And that was that one of the greatest strengths of the British media is that it's so competitive, i.e. there are a lot of media owners.
Yes.
And he said that is why politics in that country is so transparent. Guess what's happening in Australia? It's a total reverse of that.
We don't have a competitive media
environment. We do not.
Even with online, I mean, you know online better than most. You're one of the pioneers. Even with the rise of blogs, you know, crikey.com.au, a whole lot of sort of pundit blog sites and websites, isn't that bringing increased competition in Australia in an online sense?
It is, but it's very disparate. I mean, different people follow their own interests in different areas. You watch TV at night and you get served up what they want you to watch, and that's right across the country. So as opposed to being 50,000 different web pages giving 50,000 different points of view, the mainstream media have a specific message they portray, which makes them strong.
I'm going to wrap the interview up, but there is a bit of a postscript to your story of sorts.
Yeah.
More recently, only a few years back, 2007, just before the federal election, I think it was, you were actually out of the country. You were in South Africa launching a new book, Children of the Mist. What was it about, by the way?
Well, this is the irony of the whole thing. I've been studying the Griqua people, who are a multiracial tribe in South Africa for 30 years. And the book, Children of the Mist, was their story. And that book is now being embraced by the Griqua people in South Africa and is their official history. I'm going back to South Africa in 2 months, and I'm going to be meeting with the Griqua National Council. I'm going to all their main settlements. I'm meeting with lots of Griquas. As I said, I am totally colorblind, and I think that book bears that fact out.
So you launched this book in 2007,
yeah,
in South Africa, but something unusual happened at the time.
Yes, it did.
It was a federal election.
Yeah.
Kevin Rudd was the opposition leader.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Mitchell, former editor of the Courier Mail newspaper, now edits the Australian mm-hmm. newspaper, the National News Limited Daily. What happened?
Well, Kevin Rudd was getting some flack because of his involvement in the shredding of the Heiner documents, which is still unresolved and still disgusting. I mean, there should be an independent inquiry into that.
There was an attempt by Senator Nick Xenophon to get that up in federal parliament in the last month, but
yeah,
it didn't make it because of Senator Steve Fielding switched his vote.
Yeah, and of course, that is just a shocking thing that he did. But what happened was... In response to these articles that were appearing on certain blogs by reporters, Chris Mitchell, the paper of The Australian, they carried a story which basically suggested that the people who are supporting the promotion of the shredding of the Heiner documents as being a scandal were right-wingers and racists. And of course, my name was prominently mentioned in that article.
Did you have anything to do with raising this during the 2007 federal election?
Not at all. All I had was the old page that I'd had from my old News of the Day where I had the shredding information carried.
This is back when you started the first online...
Back in 1995.
So what you were personally named...
Personally named.
As someone who was pushing this agenda...
Yeah, and...
By the Australian newspaper under the editorship of Chris Mitchell at that time.
Yes.
Okay, that you were the person trying to get Kevin Rudd.
Yeah, well, I was one of the people.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Was there any truth to it?
No.
So you were in South Africa, and your name appears in Australian newspapers as being behind this. And how were you described at the time?
In the article?
Yeah, in the Australian newspaper, yes.
Well, basically, the link is made that I have been someone who's been pushing the case that there's something wrong with what's been going on there.
And well, you do believe that, don't you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, absolutely believe that. But the link comes in where it said that I've been associated with racist organisations and anti-Semitic organisations, etc. No.
All right. So you were. So these were what? How do you regard those statements by the Australian newspaper at the time?
Well, I was appalled because I was in South Africa. It was actually the day that I was meeting with people at Nelson Mandela's Foundation in Johannesburg, which is quite extraordinary.
All right. So this appears in the papers. You know nothing about it. You're on the other side of the planet. Did that article reveal that Kevin Rudd had named Chris Mitchell as the godfather to his one of his children at the time?
No.
All right. What did had that actually happened at that time?
Yes.
Okay. So that in a sense the personal relationship between Mr. Rudd and Chris Mitchell the Australian wasn't revealed to their readers at the time, as far as you can recall.
Never. It never has been. In fact, crikey.com is the only place where they've actually talked about Kevin Rudd being the godfather of Chris Mitchell's son.
All right. Now, did you complain about this to something like the Press Council?
I did.
And what happened?
I went to the Australian Press Council, and what I did was I took a copy of my book, Children of the Mist, with me. And they were good, the committee. They gave me 20 minutes to talk, and I gave a copy of the book that they could all have a look at. And as a result of that meeting, they came out with a ruling which supported my view that the article had been unfair and that, I was not racist and I was not anti-Semitic. And since that time, I've got to say, the Australian has been very quiet. They haven't mentioned my name since then.
So the Press Council found in your favour?
They found in my favour.
Did they order any sort of remedy by the Australian?
The only remedy was that they had to publish the ruling, which they did on page 35 in the media section.
Well, at least it was published. So how do you then, Scott Balson, after going through this, and this is, only a skimming over of quite an incredible tale, how do you regard calls for an inquiry into the Australian media?
Well, I think it's got to go a lot deeper. I think really the points of reference should be, how do we break up the control of the media by one very powerful publisher who's clearly been shown to be immoral when it comes to illegal phone tapping, and I don't buy the fact that he claims he didn't know. He is the man in charge. Basically, his media operation in Australia should be broken up into little bits, and different people should own it, because then you're going to get fair and balanced reporting.
Would you cooperate with any sort of inquiry into the media in Australia?
Absolutely.
Should it look at the links between media organisations and political figures? In other words, where there's a symbiosis of work or relationship?
Yes, but I think if the media is broken up into different publishing organisations, that won't be such a big issue, because the power will be taken away.
What are you doing now, Scott Balson?
Still building web pages.
Any involvement with sort of the new form of Pauline Hanson's political party?
No. Now, I've been out of politics since the time of the arrest. In fact, I closed down my online newspaper in April 2000 as a result of what I went through.
Scott Balson, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
Scott Balson, up close and personal, former editor of webmaster of the One Nation Political Party.
This is ABC Local Radio Queensland.
Tony Delroy with you after 10 tonight, High Tone.
Yes, good evening, Steve. Reserve Bank announced today that they wouldn't